Hi, my name is Kayla Sanford. I am 16 years old. Today is November 27, 2018, and I'm speaking with Martin Melder, who is my dad. We are recording this interview in Memphis, Tennessee. First question, can you tell me a little bit about your childhood? What were you like as a child?
I was a fairly typical child of the 60s and 70s, played a lot outside, had friends who lived close by, and a fairly happy child, a good home life.
Next question. Are there any positive moments or memories from your life that you think shaped who you are today? And are there any negative events or memories that you think shaped who you are today?
Obviously, yeah, both. We'll go with negative first so we end on a positive note. Negative would probably be, the first major negative in my life would be the realization that my older brother was deaf and that other kids would make fun of him. And as a young boy, I didn't understand that and it hurt my feelings. So that would be a negative. The next major negative of my childhood, I guess, was my teens when my parents got divorced. As far as positives in my formative years would have been prior to my parents' marriage dissolving, I was raised in a house where I had no doubt that I was fully loved by both my mother and my father. Had a normal, typical relationship with my brother, and that was a positive. And was raised in a fairly good neighborhood with solid neighbors who would tell on me if I did bad things and would tell my parents to get me in trouble, which in retrospect was a form of love, which was a good thing. So those would be the positives. I was raised in a time and a place where people kind of sort of still took care of each other. So those would be the positives.
Can you share or tell a story about your brother being deaf?
I'm not sure I can. I have to clean him up a little bit. My friends, so-called friends, neighborhood kids, had never seen anybody who was deaf. And my brother went to school out of town most of the time. He was in town every other weekend and summers, Christmas, Thanksgiving, stuff like that. But most of the year he was away at a deaf school. And so he was in and out. But when he was in, we would obviously wander the neighborhood like boys. And my so-called friends that had never met him before would always deny the fact that he was deaf. They thought he was just lying because his vocal cords still worked just fine. And he could express himself vocally, but he couldn't speak, but he could, you know, make noises. And so they would think he was just lying. And so he'd be walking away. Invariably, one of them would holler at him, and for whatever reason, he would turn around. Not because he heard him, he just happened to turn around to see what we were doing. And they'd say, see, he can hear. And so I would have to try to convince him that he couldn't, and it was a ridiculous argument, and so stuff kids would do. The funnest thing to do is when I had a so-called friend that I didn't like, I would tell Monty, my older brother, that they said something nasty about him, and he would chase them down and beat the mess out of them, and I would laugh. So, because, you know, it was funny. So, there you go. There's a story about my brothers. I thought you'd like that one. I cleaned it up. I said beat the mess out of
him. How would you like to be remembered?
Actually, as I've gotten older, that has occurred to me. You're talking about legacy. And, you know, legacy is so tied into ego. And ego is such a wicked, nasty thing. We all have one, obviously. We're all concerned about our ego. It's as normal as breathing in air. But as you get older, one of the graces of age is, if you're lucky, you start to lose a little ego. And to be be honest, there's very few people, very, very few people that I care about what they think of me or remember me or any of that, because I don't know most people. Most people don't know me. There's a half a dozen people at most that I hope remember me fondly, remember me as being honest and real and just being what I am. As Popeye would say, I am what I am. Not flawed in many, many ways, but not fake in any way. Just be as real as I know how to be, as often as I can be, that's appropriate. But what I hope, with a little more time and grace, is I can also be remembered as a man of God. Hopefully I raised my child to understand that God comes first and foremost above all things, and that the word love that I share with her all the time is the ultimate form of love is God. God is love. They're the same. They're one and the same. And so if I teach her nothing, if she remembers nothing, if my little brother Murray remembers nothing, who are the two primary ones I'm concerned about, is that to always keep in troubled times to circle back to that, to circle back to that. And that's what I would hope they would remember from me, about me. And, you know, I mean, that's, they'll love me. I love them. They'll remember the love, and the love's what matters. All the other stuff is just details. It's not really important at all. It's just stuff and details. But the moments that we've created together, the memories we've created together, will all be engulfed in an envelope of love. Because that's what I remember about my father. So hopefully that's what my child will remember about me.
You talked about love and how you want people to remember you or remember that you love them. Mm-hmm. But people use the word love very loosely.
They do.
So how do you interpret your love for others?
Actions. My actions speak louder than my words. That's something my father used to beat me up with when I was a boy. And I hated it then and love it as a man, because what you do, not what you say, is what I believe. Anybody can say anything. And it happens every day, all day, on TV, radio, all social medias. People that you know, people that you don't know, they all can talk. But people that love you, you know that they love you by the things that they do consistently over a period of time. They put you before them, and you know that they did. And it just, it becomes apparent, it becomes obvious. It's like asking somebody, does your mother love you? And they say, yeah, of course. And then you tell them to prove it. It's hard to do. Well, she washes my clothes and drives me to school or buys my food. Okay, those are all just things. And prove love. And it's something you feel. It's like believing in God. It's blind faith. You either know it, you feel it, or you don't. And when somebody genuinely loves you, genuinely doesn't have an agenda, there's not a price tag, or you don't have to do X to earn my love, you just have it, and that is inert. You can just feel it on a core bone level. You just know it or you don't. And that doesn't mean you can't doubt it sometimes when you're upset, but at your root, you know that there's just a small smattering of people who love you exactly the way you are. Thorns, warts, good times when you're looking your absolute best, the worst times when you're just a bubbling mess, when you're on top of the world or lower than a snail's belly, they love you both times and all of the in-betweens. And that don't mean they like you all the time, but they always love you. And so the ones that I know that I love and I know that love me, That's already a given, and I'm a talker, and I make sure to express those words, but more importantly, make sure to show the ones that I love that I love them. And that just doesn't include my daughter or my brother. It also includes two very good friends of mine, my daughter's mother, my mother, and maybe one or two other people. And so there'll be no doubts when and if my time comes to check out of here that the ones that mattered the most to me will know that they mattered the most to me. And so that's how I know they'll know what love is, because, you know, that's, we're back to the God thing. God is love, and it's the God's grace. I mean, he put his son on the cross and so on and so forth. I'm not going to start preaching here, but that's a hell of a sacrifice. And we call God our Father, and there's a reason we call him our Father, because he loves us like only a father could love a child. And I love my child irregardless of whether or not I'm happy with her every day. And so I get that. There's nothing that she could do, literally nothing she could do to make me not love her. And so that's love. I mean, that's the ultimate form of love. And I know that she loves me most of the time. So that's all.
You're just lying to the recorder.
No, so my version.
Mm-hmm.
All right, keep going.
Can you tell me about some of the most important lessons you've learned in life?
Well, I just spoke to one of them. Actions speak louder than words. That's probably the most important lessons. Let your actions speak for you, not your words. Don't talk about the big game if you're not going to follow through. In fact, it's better to do first and speak second. But most of us have a tendency to talk it up. But make sure you can back up what you speak. Follow through. I can sit here and tell you some cliches that I don't necessarily believe in. I know they sound good and all that, but life is difficult. And one of my favorite sayings that most folks don't like, but I steal that from the first line of The Road Less Traveled from author M. Scott Peck. Life is difficult. And once you accept that simple, simple premise, then life becomes less difficult. Once you understand that it's supposed to be hard, then you go, okay, so it's supposed to be this way. That's normal. That's the starting line, is life is difficult for everybody, not just me. I'm not uniquely afflicted. That's for all of us. And so once you understand that, then you start to appreciate the sunshiny days, the birds chirping, the dog waggling his tail, the hug of someone who loves you. And realize that there are wonderfully, wonderfully great moments in that difficult life, but life is difficult. There will be ups and downs, maybe sometimes more downs than ups, but it's supposed to be that way, and that's okay. And because when my child's learning calculus, it's difficult. When she's learning anything that she's never had to learn before, chemistry or any other subject matter, that's just stressing her to the max, that means her brain is accumulating information and knowledge. And anytime you're growing, if it's working out in a gym and you just started working out, your muscles are going to ache, your body's going to feel like crap at first. It's going to be difficult. And then if you keep going back to the gym and you keep working out, pretty soon you're running miles and miles and you feel great. The adrenaline starts pumping, the endorphins start popping. Well, the same is true with education and physical activity, relationships, as they can be difficult. But if they're held on to and you ride through the rough water with the right person, not every person, they can turn into some long life lasting, beautiful things. And most of the good stuff in life is starts off, or at some point early on, becomes difficult. And generally speaking, the stuff that you get pretty quick and easy, you don't appreciate it, and it kind of gets thrown to the side. And the stuff that you have to work your butt off for is valuable to you. So I got a little long-winded there, meandered, but that's a life lesson for me. The actions speak louder words, and life is difficult is probably the primary two. And then the third one, just to to wrap it up would be me circling back to my overarching theme, which is love. At the end of the day, don't forget that love is what matters. All the rest of it is just stuff. You know, you ran a 5-minute mile. Woohoo! Congratulations. You got the best score in class. Woohoo! Congratulations. But don't forget that when your great-grandmother has an event that you can go to, or you can stay home and go to a party with your friends, that your great-grandmother, who's not going to be here for many more years, is going to help you create a memory that you will cherish for a lifetime. That party's just going to be one of 100 parties that you're going to go to in your lifetime. And it'll quickly fade in your memory. But wrapping your arms around that old woman's neck and feeling the love that radiates out of her, now that's the good stuff. But that will be a difficult decision. So it will be hard. It'll be inconvenient, but then it will be rewarded with that love. So, you know, there's all kind of life lessons. How many you want? Go ahead.
How has being a parent changed you?
Dramatically. In almost every facet of my life. The most obvious way for me, personally, fortunately I was older in life, when I became a dad, because I don't know that I would have been a very good dad as a young dad. Because like most young parents, I would have still been stuck very much on me. Like most of us are, we're very, very stuck on, we are so special. We are so unique. We are so this. And it takes a little time, maybe all the way into your 30s, to be honest with you, and sometimes longer, to start to shed some of that and be able to give a child what a child truly needs. Now, that's not to say you can't be a good parent as a young parent. My parents were, mostly. But it's far more difficult. So, fortunately, I was older. So, when she came along and we bonded, it made me, most importantly, more than anything else, the number one thing it made me do was want to be a better man for her. To cast away a lot of my selfish desires for things that weren't healthy for me, emotionally and spiritually, and a little bit physically. She's still working on that part. But mostly it just made me want to be a man that she could look up to and learn how a man's supposed to act, how he's supposed to treat her mother, how he's supposed to treat her, how he's supposed to work, how he's supposed to carry himself in society, how he's supposed to speak about others. And every facet of life, I have to check myself, I have to put myself in the correct mindset so that I don't share a bunch of negative garbage or a bunch of false fantasies and tell her that the world is a wonderful place all the time, or that the world is a terrible place all the time, and try to be honest with her and real with her. And so that's, should, as a result of all that, of being a parent, you end up trying to do things that you haven't done before, and so it makes you grow. And that's always a good thing. Growth is always a good thing, even when it's difficult. And then there's the gloriness of, you know, watching her grow and turn into a little person who then turns into a teenager, which is a whole nother chapter. And then you have to learn more stuff and more stuff and more stuff, and it becomes more challenging because your child is now a young adult. They're not a child, they're an actual person with their own thoughts and opinions, and you have to learn to respect them while challenging them and still trying to guide them and protect them. And that's a whole different ball game, because now you're semi-fighting your child to get them to continue to go down the path that you've taught them to go down. So, but overall, it's changed me in every level. There's not a thought of a thing that I'm going to do this major in my life that I don't consider her first, and how it might or might not impact her life first. And so as a parent, if you're a real parent in my mind, everything's child first and everything else second when it comes to day-to-day decisions. Obviously, God's always first, but your child is literally directly right behind that, and then everything else is behind that. So, yeah, it changes you, hopefully, for the better. And, you know, it's not always the case, unfortunately, for a lot of children. But for me, it has been the case. I'm a better man now than I was when, before me and my child became me and her. And there's no doubt about that. Next.
What were your first thoughts when you first saw me?
I don't know. That's not really fair, because...
Okay, I'll make it fair.
No. Leave it the way it is. I can work with it. Because the first thoughts, you were, you know, I mean... Obviously, I thought you were a pretty little girl. I mean, we didn't know each other. We didn't... I mean, I knew you. Who you were. Obviously, I knew you when you were in your mother's belly, so I had some vision of what you would look like and all that ahead of time, but I was completely and totally enamored with your mother at that moment. So you were kind of secondary, so it's not entirely fair to you because I didn't know you. And now you were just a cute little girl who looked at me like, who in the world are you? Why are you talking to me? And I get that. And so there was no bond, there was no relationship, but me and your mother already had a relationship, already had a bond, had known each other for a very long time before then. And so there was joy in my mind, because I was reconnected with somebody I hadn't seen in a long time. So that the first time I saw you was just like, oh yeah, she's a cute little girl, we're really big for you. But hey, you grew into the forehead, so it worked out. I've told you the forehead story before. Oh, I just wanted to throw something funny in there. Mm-hmm. You're so pretty every now and then. I got a little air out of that head. Go ahead.
What are your thoughts now, since I'm 16? I've grown.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Up.
So what are my thoughts of you now? In all aspects, or any particular area, or what?
No, just overall, like...
As a person.
As a person, and as your daughter, is this how you envisioned me to be?
Mostly. I mean, I didn't put a lot of thought into it, to be honest with you. I don't really do that when it comes to you. I don't try to preordain where I think you are to be or should be. I kind of, and you can speak to this yourself, I'm more of a supportive, which direction do you want to go? Okay, let's do it the best we can kind of parent. If that's what you feel a passion for, then I'm there, and I want to give you all the support system to do that well, and wanted you to be able to develop your passions to yourself. I don't push or pull on too many things when it comes to your social activities or school activities, as long as you're doing it correctly. You know, if you want to aspire to be a lawyer, I got your back. If you want to aspire to be the person who puts people to sleep, I got your back. If you aspire to be a, you know, whatever it is, an actress or a entertainer or an athlete or the Undertaker. I mean, you know, pick your poison there. I'm going to do everything I can to get you there. So I don't do that. I didn't. Obviously, physically, I could see what was coming. It was obvious you were going to be a very pretty girl. You were a pretty child. It didn't always work out that way, but in your case, it has. You were blessed with good genes, as we both know, a blessing and a cursing. So you're a very pretty girl, and this, that, and other, and that's good. I would rather you to have the advantage of attractiveness than not to have it. But although I see it, it doesn't actually, you know, for me, that's not Kayla. Kayla is, you know, you're my child. You're much more than that to me. You're, the personality that you're becoming. It's been fun to watch you try to figure out your place amongst your peers. I know sometimes you're a follower, sometimes you're a leader. I've watched all that from a distance. I know sometimes you do really good in subjects in schools, and other times, average. You're a typical teenager who, my opinion of you is, you're pretty much right about where you are to be. You're kind of floundering a little bit. Almost every teenager I know does. But you have some really awesome potential and display it from time to time. And then other times you remind me you're a lazy bone teenager, because it's typical. So you're about where, I'm proud to call you my daughter, let's put it that way. There's nothing, almost, that you've done that would make me not be proud to tell anybody about. But that's just, you're right where you are to be. It's not something I'd really given a lot of thought about. I'm not overly concerned as a parent that you're on the wrong track, which I think is what most parents fight with teenagers. Like, oh my God. I don't have those thoughts about you. My thoughts are more focused on, okay, what can we do to continue to go down the path that you're on? And if I'm more worried about continuing on the path you're on, that means you're doing pretty good. Because my first concern is always to get you to the finish line so that you can be a productive, happy, mainly happy human being when you fly this coop and go bye-bye. We'll sure miss you.
Are there any funny stories people tell about you from when you were growing up?
Probably not. I'm trying to think. I don't really talk to people when I do growing up. Funny stories. Not really. None that popped in my head that I can think of, that people that I know that are still around. My father was alive, he could tell you some, I'm sure. None that rushed to my head, so now I don't have a good solid answer for that one. I'll make something up if you want me to. But no, I wouldn't. But no, I don't really have anything for that one.
And last question.
Oh no.
Are there any lessons your work life has taught you?
Of course, yeah. It's just like my personal life or my new life with my daughter. Work, if you allow it to, is a defining thing. Where as an adult you'll make most of your relationships at work. I know times have changed, and for your generation and ones combined, but most of the people I know that are married met at work. Now today, of course, that's taboo. But back then, it's like, okay, you're spending 40 or 50 hours a week at this place. Who do you know better than these people? So obviously, if you're attracted to Sally and Sally's attracted to you, and there was no pressure, you weren't her boss, y'all were just co-workers, and y'all might get to know each other, and then you might hit it off, and you might get married and have 10 kids. Who knows? Today, all that's a little, different, but I don't feel like getting in preachy mode about all that. But so work is where you interact with other people, you learn how to be around people you don't particularly want to be around, which is why I'm glad that Kayla has played team sports, because team sports is kind of like, and cheerleading now is very much like work. There's going to be people on the team, be it track or volleyball or cheerleading or any other sport at St. George's or any other school. There's going to be multiple people on that team, and of those multiple people, you're going to like one or two of them a lot. You're going to like the middle pack of them, the vast majority of them are going to be the okay area. And then there's going to be one or two at the bottom of the pack, and you're pecking order that you're like, oh, don't particularly enjoy this person's company, to put it as nice a way as I know how. And that's completely and totally normal. And that will be that way at any hospital or office building or law firm or anywhere you go. Any job you ever get, there's 5 people there, 100 people there, or 1,000 people there. There'll be 1 or 2 or 3 that you just click with. Their personality clicks well with your personality. You'll befriend them. They'll befriend you. You'll have lunch. You'll do things potentially together. And some of them will become lifelong friends. I have one of my friends like that right now who I met at work 30 years ago. So, and didn't know him before work. And my other best friend is work related. So work spawns into relationships that can be for seriously really positive relationships. It also can be very negative. You can work with people who have some real serious personality issues compared to yours. Or they may think you have the personality issue. Doesn't matter, because it's an issue. And you have to learn how to be productive and successful and grow a career in spite of those things. And that's a challenge. And you'll bring it home with you, and then you gotta learn how to let go of it when you're at home and not bring work home, because unlike school, there, you know, this it's not encouraged. Although a lot of people do work at home now, so I guess that's different too. Now that I think about it, things have changed. But yeah, I mean, work is a social dynamic that is imperative to figure out how to manage without, once again, being as real as you can be. But in this scenario, unlike what I was talking about earlier, this is not where you want to be the real, real you, like I am with my child and my brother and all that. Because if I was the real, real me on my job, I wouldn't have a job very long. So you have to learn how to be politically correct and how not to hurt people's feelings and how to say the right things, not lie, but say the correct things or not say anything at all to the right people at the right time. That means bosses and people who may or may not be working for you. I mean, if either or, underling or a superior is not fulfilling the task up to the level that you think they should, there's a productive and correct way to go about letting them know that, as opposed to just walking up going blah 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 blah, because that won't get positive results. That will make you feel really good in the moment, and that's the proverbial win the battle, lose the war. And those tools and that tool set will become dramatically important as you navigate the work world, because you will work with some people who are very interesting, and some people who are just phenomenal, who are just like some of the coolest, smartest people you've ever met in your life. You'll meet and work. You'll meet them at work. And that's, you know, that'll be awesome for you. And then you'll meet, and the really cool part is work really is the final melting pot of society. Because you don't get to choose who you work with. I mean, you know, and for the most part, unless you start your own business. But there'll be men and women, and old folks and young folks, and inexperienced people and really experienced people. There'll be obviously black, white, Asian, Latino. I mean, there really is a microcosm of society all mixed in together and stirred up. And what you will, the most important thing, if you're lucky, that you'll learn from work is a sense of self-worth. Because you'll feel good about yourself. You'll go home at the end of the day. And if you do your work well, if you go in there and you genuinely do the best you can do, when you go home at the end of the day, there's a sense of accomplishment. Very much like at this stage of your life, like getting your homework done. You know, when you're actually done with it, you're like, huh. And there is a sense of accomplishment. And so work is very much like that as well. You got a project, you got to do a work, or in your case, if you go into the medical field and you're the person who has to put me asleep, but hopefully you wake me up and I don't take the big sleep. And so say you did six of those today, and it was a really long day, and one of the surgeries went for like 8 hours, and you had to sit there the whole time and monitor the patient. That's difficult stuff. And their life literally hangs in the balance. And so at the end of the day, you go home knowing, in small part, obviously the doctor and the nurses and all that were up on top of the table doing their thing, but had you not done your thing, then there's a really good chance that person wouldn't be with us. So now they're coming out of surgery, and they're potentially, hopefully, if everything else goes well in the recovery process, they're going to go home to their family, and that you contributed to that. So when you look at the mirror at the end of the night, you got a few little bags under your eyes. You're like, it was worth it. I helped save somebody's life today. Or if you're a lawyer and you won a court case, be it legal, a class action lawsuit or a legal defense of somebody or whatever it may be, and they go home with the verdict that you were hoping for, you feel good about it. Or even if they go home with a verdict you didn't want, it bothers you, and you learn from that, and you try to figure out how not to let that happen again. So there's all kind of life lessons to be learned there. Work is a endless well of knowledge to be tapped, to where, there's almost no part of your life that work can't, depending on what kind of company you work for, that you can't grow and learn from. I mean, you can start off in one position on a job, as I've done on a couple of jobs, and an entry level position, and by the time you're done, you're in a much different position, not a position of power, because that sounds egotistical, but a position of you're one of the bosses, let's put it that way, or mid-management, or whatever the case may be. And we're hearing from the crowd out there. And as you do the job and you grow and learn, it changes who you are as a person. And as your titles change and the people you interact with change, then you start learning more and more about those people, and you start learning more and more about yourself. Well, the more you learn about all that kind of stuff, obviously it translates into your personal life. And so who you become as a person changes. So work is invaluable. I mean, people complain about work constantly. I hate my job, I hate this, I hate that. They do. I mean, I hear people complain all the time about working. But at the end of the day, without work, then you sit around and you start to feel worthless, because you don't have a sense of accomplishment. You don't have a thing that you have to be at, a thing that you have to do. And the most successful people that I've ever known are people who have something they got to do. And, in my case, it's, working on what I work on. And in my child's mother's case, her primary job, obviously, is raising this hard-headed child of ours and being a great mom, which she does a very good job of doing. But there's so many other lessons to be learned from a job that it's endless. You can expand your career and into a completely different field. Like somebody works at FedEx, for example, they can start off in the hub and have no interest in a aeronautical background. They just want to shove some carts in a plane and earn $13 an hour, or whatever it is they pay out there, and move on with their life. And then all of a sudden, Fred Smith and them, of course he's not there anymore, but whoever's out there has created a program that they can go to for free. They can literally go to a college, I think the University of Memphis and some others, for free. FedEx will pay for their education, and then go get education. Next thing they know, they're training to fly the big old planes, or they could figure out that they really like human resources, or they really like marketing or logistics, or I mean, there's just so many opportunities inside that one company. There's literally, I mean, the legal field, obviously FedEx would have a ton of lawyers, and they will pay you to be a lawyer. So the when it comes to a job, I mean, you know, it's endless on what you can do with a career. And there's nobody that says that you have to stay in a career. So apparently I've talked too long now.
Okay, to wrap up this interview, How do you think it went?
The interview?
The interview.
Well, I love the sound of my own voice, so obviously I think it's pretty good. Anytime I get to talk. You know, it's cool. I mean, it was a little different. I didn't exactly know what we were fixing to do here, so it's all off the top of my head, and it's primarily about me, which I kind of hate. I never actually particularly like focusing the stuff on me.
Uh-huh.
I really don't. I don't. I mean, I play like I do, but in reality, I don't do that. We're back to the actions speak louder than words. I got to spend quality time with my very favorite humanoid. And, you know, got to express some things to her. Maybe she'll remember some of them. I doubt it, but a couple of them. Overall, for me, it was cathartic. Good word. Thank you. And I had a plethora of things to say. And I found it wildly entertaining. So, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Good job.
I thought we had to have 45 minutes.
No, I said 30.
Oh, I thought you said 45. I was trying to babble on about it. I was trying to reach 45. I thought you had to have the whole 45. That's why I kept on talking about a job.
That's what I was like.
You were saying that. I thought you were saying stretch.
Oh, no, I was saying reel it in.
Oh, shit, I wish you'd said it. You should have wrote it down. I was done 5 minutes ago. I just kept babbling. I was reaching for shit like, job opportunities, FedEx. I was just reaching for
it. I was like, keep going.
I was getting more of this kind of mode, like, go. I thought I was trying to hit the, you kept pointing down there, and I was like, okay, we got 8 more minutes. God damn, what am I going to talk about for 8 more minutes? I was through a long time ago. You can edit some of that out. Talking about the job shit, you cut a lot of that out, because I was a bad one. I don't know if you know how to edit.